Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. For Sac State's new president, there wasn't really a settling in period. From the day President Luke Wood arrived on campus, he was tasked with overcoming some big obstacles that could jeopardize the success of the university. From stalled negotiations and labor strikes for faculty and staff that is still ongoing, to steering Cap Radio, which is an auxiliary of the university, off a financial cliff. Less than 6 months in, President Wood's time has been filled with big tests, but it's not all crises. There were also highlights and some big milestones to look forward to. So President Wood is joining us now with an outlook for 2024, the new year. Welcome back to Insight.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, but you do have this unique perspective coming in as president. I mean, you're a Sac State graduate, both your undergrad and master's. You left to get your PhD. You came back to us from San Diego State, which is part of the Cal State family. So you have like this insider, outsider, insider perspective, not to mention the youngest president in Sac State history. So in the past 5 months and change that you've actually been in this position, did it meet your expectations? Is it what you envisioned it to be?
Very much so. I mean, obviously, some of the unique challenges weren't expected. But at the same time, whenever you assume a leadership role like this, you know that there's going to be things that aren't what you expect. And that's part of it. But I think one of the best parts about coming back was spending a semester getting reacquainted with Sacramento State and seeing so many people who are part of my own journey, faculty members, staff members who are still on campus, who are still, you know, fighting the good fight for our students, and even people who I went to school with who are now on staff or on faculty just doing great work. So it was a pretty enjoyable transition home.
Given that you already had this familiarity and that kind of foundation already set, when you arrived on campus, I remember you mentioning that you were going to go on a listening tour, 100 days of listening. What did you learn and did anything surprise you?
Yeah, so the listening tour was pretty extensive. And part of it, what it was, is when you come back into an environment, you should never make an assumption, right? Being a student at Sacramento State is not the same thing as being in a presidential role. And so I wanted to have the opportunity to hear from our students, our faculty, our staff, our alumni, our community members, our religious communities, and to just have an understanding of like what has been their experience. And we asked them a few questions. So the first one was, what makes Sacramento State distinctive? The second one was, where do you want to see Sacramento State 5 years from now or even tomorrow? And what are the specific things you want us to do to get there? And then how do we accomplish all that while embracing our values of justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion? And we did 92 listening sessions, an hour and 15 minutes each. So pretty extensive, over 1,500 people that we had conversations with, and just learned a lot about the campus and some really good things. You know, a lot of people come to Sacramento State, of course, because we're in the state capital, because we have a beautiful park-like campus, because we're a campus that people feel like they're not just going to be a number, but they're going to be a name. They're going to be a future, that there's faculty members who are going to invest their time in them. And that was a really nice thing to hear, not only just from the students, but also from the faculty members about, you know, what is it is that brought them here. So there was a lot of really wonderful things that we learned that draw people to Sacramento State and make it unique. And also, of course, as I'm hearing all this, I'm reflecting on my own experience. Why did I choose Sacramento State when I was a young kid? And a lot of it was for the same reason. I wanted to work at the state capitol and get some of that experience. And I'm from the mountains. And so coming to a campus that looks like a park is felt very comfortable and just welcoming. And then the diversity of students, it was just, you know, an enjoyable experience. And hearing people say the same things, it says that, you know, Sacramento State, the great things about it have staying power.
Yeah, more than 100 hours of listening you ended up doing. When it came to challenges and, you know, where people were dissatisfied, what did you gain from that? What did you learn?
Yeah, there were certainly challenges. Of course, Capital Public Radio came up as part of those challenges and concerns, you know, rightfully so, as we discussed before. We also heard about, you know, there being bureaucratic red tape that's in place that prevents a lot of really good work from getting done. And that, you know, there can at times be a culture of no because of the bureaucracy that has been created. And so one of the things that we said that we were going to do, and we released this to the campus community, is that we're going to have a bureaucratic reduction committee that's going to look at our policies, our processes, how we can streamline things, just to make it so that it's an easier to get good work done. And so that was one of the big things that we heard. We also heard about, you know, lack of resources. And, you know, we're a public institution. We are dependent upon the state for the resources that we have. And unfortunately, we are not resourced to in the way that we need to be to do the good work that we're doing. And so that causes strain on employees. That causes a lot of stress for people. And so there was a lot of conversation around that. And of course, the backdrop of that is also the tuition increase that took place for students. The system voted for a 6% increase over the next 5 years. And then at the same time, as you mentioned, we're going through labor negotiations with our faculty union and with our Teamsters and other unions. And so there's the backdrop of all that placed against the fact that we struggle with resources to do the good work that we're already doing.
When it comes to the collective bargaining groups at the university, I understand that like CSU management, it really handles the negotiations and that's above you. But last month when Sacramento was among, you know, four universities that took part in rolling strikes, this is at the beginning of December, you know, given that you've been a professor, your wife is a professor as well, does their message about better pay and benefits, does it resonate with you?
Well, I had come up from a union background. So one of my first jobs was working for the California Faculty Association. And then I worked for AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. I worked for ACORN, worked for SEIU. So I have, I think, a union upbringing. And so for me, it's always been important that when people are doing work, that they should be properly compensated for that work. And so I am always attentive to the fact that we need to make sure that that's happening. And then, you know, the proximity for me in this, you know, having that background and then having my wife currently be a member of the faculty union and then meeting regularly in this role as president with all of our unions and our represented employees, you know, it's a very close conversation to me. Yet at the same time, as you mentioned, this is all done at the state level. So the system does all the negotiation and we are simply the recipients of those decisions that are made. And they're wrestling with a lot of difficult decisions, right? How do we pay for increases? How do we make sure that people are properly honored for the work that they're doing? And that balance and trying to find the balance is a hard part because we want to, we have to be able to have the resources to do the good work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So when the strike took place, as you mentioned, there was four campuses. Sacramento State was chosen. It was a one-day strike, and we definitely saw a reduction in activity on campus. And, you know, the entrances there were, you know, partially closed at times during the day when that was occurring. And we know that there is an upcoming one-week strike that's going to take place during the first week of school. And so, you know, for me, the main thing is making sure that our campus is engaged in planning to be prepared for that, to make sure that students are getting what they need and what they deserve. And at the same time, also respecting the right that representative employees have to strike.
Yeah, so that week-long strike, which I believe is scheduled to take place January 22nd, which is, you know, the start of the first week of classes, that's both the California Faculty Association in tandem with the Teamsters. But from what I understood from their press release, it depends on negotiations next week. And if they're not fruitful, then that strike will commence.
Yes, and that's accurate. And so, of course, I hope that those negotiations, that the distance between both the system and their unions is met somewhere in the middle. And so that's what I'm hoping for.
How do you plan as a university president, given that it's the first week of classes?
Well, it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, we have a coordination committee that's been working tirelessly on this. And there's so many different elements to it, even down to we have, you know, boilers on campus. And what happens if we don't have people to run the boilers?
Yeah, so building service engineers, right?
Yeah, I mean, so the level of detail and intricacy that you have to get down to when it comes to something like this is pretty significant. And I'll say that it certainly a one-day strike is reasonable to manage. A one-week strike is very difficult to manage. And so we're thinking through every single option. We have meetings all throughout this week trying to figure out how we're going to navigate that and ensure that the students are supported and the students are served, which is why we're here. And at the same time, acknowledging the fact that we're going to have a substantial reduction in those who are coming to work.
I want to move to another big responsibility of yours and a problem that you inherited, and that's here at CAP Radio. So the last time you joined us, it was back in October. That followed layoffs in August, as well as an audit detailing just massive financial problems and debt that is ultimately the university's responsibility. Back then in October, you said that 70 to 75% of your time is devoted to CAP Radio issues. What percentage is that now?
It's more like 40% now, but so there's been a reduction. But that being said, when it comes to what are the things that keep me up at night, it's always going to be the number one thing. CAP Radio is, in my mind, it's part of the educational mission of the university. So yes, it is totally separate entity. It is an auxiliary. It operates on its own, and that's important for that, that journalistic firewall. And at the same time, it's putting information out to the public. It's informing the public in that way. It is part of the educational mission of the university. And so for me, it was important to make sure that CAP Radio would be able to continue, that it would be healthy, that it would thrive. And at the same time, we were coming, as I walked in the door, being handed a report from our chancellor's office saying that this is, the worst audit in the system's history, and that there's some significant existential issues here. And so, at that time, we were looking at, CAP Radio running out of money sometime in January or early February. Now, I think that there's been some really good moves have been able to make that so that stretches out to April. And so I'm hoping that we continue to have the donors to CAP Radio come back and have trust that what's happening now is different than what happened in the past, and that the importance of public media moving forward into this presidential election season into 2024 is going to be the most important year to have CAP Radio in place, to have objective journalism that's being reported, because at this point, I don't think that you can trust a lot of the things that you hear in national media. You have to be able to have people who are committed to independence and true journalism, which is unfortunately not what we see at the national level. And so I'm hoping that more of our donors will see that and continue to support CAP Radio.
And in the spirit of that firewall, it's important to just remind people that, we report on ourselves independently.
Yeah.
It's not like you and I talk beforehand or when we have the interim GM of CAP Radio on as well. And so there is that objectivity and that firewall. But there's also these key leadership positions that are still vacant. We still don't have a permanent GM as well as a complete board of directors. Is there a timeline when those positions will be filled?
Absolutely. So with the board of directors, that will be filled at the next meeting of CAP Radio. The only reason that it has taken so long for that is because we had to make sure that we were doing due diligence with background checks, conflict of interest checks, and a number of background factors that were really part of what some of the concerns were from the previous board. And that takes time to do that right and to not run into some of the same concerns that were there before. So one of the beautiful parts about it was that, we put out there that we were going to be looking for new board members, and it was amazing the response from people who wanted to be on the board, despite the challenges, despite what was being reported in the news, that people were so committed, that incredible people in our community who are leaders in our community standing forward and saying, I want to be on the CAP Radio board because I want to be part of the solution. And so I think we had almost 40 people who were nominated to be part of the board. And so there's been a pretty extensive vetting process. We have an external firm that's looking at individuals, again, doing those background checks and just lots of conversation. So I feel very proud of where we're at right now, and the fact that CAP Public Radio is going to have a board that's in place. The CAP Radio has listenership that's been up, the agreement with NPR has been extended. Like, there's been some, despite all the challenges that we've talked about before, there's also a lot of really good things happening right now. And I would say that one of the markers of that success is if you're a listener, and I'm a listener myself, right, and you turn on CAP Radio, you're hearing nothing but great quality coming out. So despite the challenges that have been there, the staff have done amazing work in continuing to produce high quality news.
You mentioned though that Cap Radio still keeps you up at night. I mean, because we're talking about, you know, several billion million dollars in the hole. And on top of that, you know, given that you're a public university, you are state funded. And so the state is facing a projected deficit of like $68 billion. And Governor Newsom is expected to announce revisions and cuts next week. So is there a concern of the impact of public education ultimately impacting faculty and students?
Well, I think the budget concern, separate from Cap Radio, is absolutely a concern for us, knowing that we could receive a reduction and being concerned about how we're going to do that. Again, in combination with all those things we just discussed, we just had a tuition increase. We're having labor negotiations that are taking place right now. We already don't have a lot of resources to do the good work that we're doing. So that in and of itself is its own pool of considerations and problems. And then, of course, adding on Cap Radio to that, that's also a concern. I think, though, that the markers of success in terms of listenership, in terms of the extension of the contract with NPR, I think that what will happen is that more donors will recognize the importance of coming and continuing to support Cap Radio. So I feel confident that that Cap Radio will be vibrant in the future. You know, we went all in saying that we're committed to Cap Radio and that we're going to continue to support it, and we are. That doesn't mean that every part of that support is not going to be difficult to do. And, you know, it means that we're going to have to look at our institution as a whole, and in some places we'll have to tighten our belt. And that's okay, because, again, this is part of the educational mission of the institution. Now, I will say that, you know, there is the forensic examination that's taking place. And the forensic examination is looking at the past. My focus right now, of course, is on the future, but we do have to look retrospectively and see what were the things that led to us being in such a disastrous standpoint. And unfortunately, I think that we're gonna see some stuff come out of that.
Could be expected like at the end of this month, potentially,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Actually, it will be sometime in this month that we'll have at least the preliminary findings. And I'll say that we've also, as a campus, of course, been working with the forensic examination firm, providing them with additional information, pooling information that we've been able to find. And I could say that we don't have any preliminary findings yet, but I can look at even the information that we're providing. There's concerns, and those concerns are again about the past and about what happened in the past. But
will that translate to accountability?
It's going to have to.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sacramento State President Luke Wood. So we just have about 5 minutes left. So I'm curious, looking ahead now, do you have like a mantra or a guiding intention for 2024?
Yeah, student success. You know, and that was one of the things that President Nelson, I think, did so wonderfully, is he focused so much on helping the campus to think about how do we increase graduation rates. You know, went from 8.5% graduation rate to a 28.5% graduation rate. And so that's one marker of success is graduation rates. But what I continue to hear from the listening tours is it's also about employability and labor market outcomes. So there's a few things that we're doing in my mind that's going to help us get there. One, we've got a program that's been on campus for a long time. In fact, I was part of it when I was a student, called Cooper Woodson College. And Cooper Woodson College is an achievement program focused on students who identify as Black and African American. Open, of course, to everyone, but that's kind of the demographic that it tends to serve. And so we are resourcing that program. We're providing them with more staff, with more dollars, with additional space. Because our graduation rate might be 28.5% for the four-year rate, much higher for the six-year, but it's only 10.5% for our Black male students. So it's much lower. But when you look at Cooper Woodson, they have incredibly high graduation rates and they do an amazing job. So why don't we invest in what's working? And so we are expanding that program. We're investing that program, and we will create what will be what we believe is the first Black honors college in the country. And so I'm excited about that. That's going to be part of our narrative in 2024. 2024, you're going to see more from Sacramento State.
And there's a lot to come in 2024. I mean, there's just reading on the university's website, from, you know, faculty and staff housing to you appointed a czar for AI in education, yep. Some developments with the California Mobility Center, you know, tons of things that deserve a segment on their own, as well as a new event center. But an interesting note, I think I saw you post this on social media. You're an amateur boxer and you've talked about reviving Sacramento State's boxing program. How is that going?
It's going well, actually. So we have a boxing team from way back when. Sacramento State used to have an amazing boxing team. And, you know, I'll first say that we're not the only ones who exist in this space. UC Davis has a boxing program, San Jose State, Berkeley, UCLA used to have one. So it's not unusual for a campus to have a boxing program. But I think what makes it special is that we have some just amazing alumni who are actually, you know, professional boxers. One is Kevin Montano. He's fighting on January 20th at the Doubletree. And he was actually an Olympic alternate. And so, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be checking it out. But we've got, you know, a pool of individuals who've graduated from the campus who are doing great work. But one of the most important things about announcing that boxing was coming back was I had a mother. She walked up to me and she was very emotional. And she said, and she started crying and saying, you know, I'm so thankful that, you know, you're bringing back boxing to Sacramento State. My two sons have never once, not ever, talked about wanting to go to college or even thought about college. But now, for the first time, they're saying, hey, I want to go to Sacramento State. Because if you go to your average boxing gym, it's low-income students, it's first-generation students, students who for them, college is not even on the horizon. And so what this is really doing is it's creating a pathway into college for students who would never before consider it. And that's part of our mission as an institution, is to create access and success. And so part of that is boxing at Sacramento State.
Yeah, I've been part of a fighting gym, you know, many in a past life. So I understand that. You know, finally, President Wood, if you could talk to yourself ahead of arriving to the university this past summer, what advice would you give yourself with hindsight?
I would give myself the advice of you don't have to do everything at once. When you see a campus like Sacramento State that has so many great things happening, but also issues that need to be solved, it's easy to want to just jump in. And I think what I learned from the listening sessions is you have to continue to listen and to learn, because sometimes things that don't make sense make more sense as you hear the history of why that happened. And then sometimes you learn that things that you thought made sense don't make sense at all because of the history that happened. And so I would definitely say that the best decision was to do the listening tour. And so now I'm looking forward to this 2024. We're going to start implementing some change. And there's going to be a lot of big announcements coming out, some of them even this month. And so I think you're going to be proud of what you see come out of Sacramento State.
From listening to action.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, President Wood.
Thank you for having me.
And that is Sacramento State President Luke Wood on his outlook for the new year. And as I mentioned, Cap Radio is an auxiliary of the university. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.